Get home from school, turn on my TV. Who are these friends staring right back at me? Now that we're older, why don't you come over and go back in time with me? 90s babies, nostalgia.
Hi, I'm Amanda.
And I'm Jessica, and this is 90s Babies Nostalgia, where two fully grown millennial women rewatch and sometimes watch for the first time tween entertainment from the early 2000s.
Just to be clear, we are not sponsored by nor affiliated with any of the brands or the programs that we are talking about in this show. We just really like talking about TV. And today, the TV that we're talking about is
Lizzie McGuire, season 2.
So Lizzie McGuire is a little bit different in that at this time, all of the Disney Channel shows had a 65 episode cap. Even Stevens hit that with 3 seasons of just over 20 episodes each. Lizzie hit that with 2 seasons over 30 episodes. And we split season 1 into 2 episodes of our podcast. If you haven't listened to them, you should, because Lizzie is amazing. But because Lizzie's so amazing, we got to season 2 and we were like, we literally can't cut any of these episodes.
Yep. Amanda had like a semi-existential crisis about narrowing down what episodes for me to watch. And so we made a mutual decision that we are going to make season 2 3 podcast episodes. We're going to review all of the episodes of Lizzie McGuire season 2, which is 34 episodes in total. So today we'll be going through episodes 1-13.
Hopefully you're happy about that. You want more Lizzie, because Lizzie was it for our childhoods, for so many of us. And if you're not happy about that, I don't know who you are. I don't know what your problem is. And it doesn't matter, because we're doing it.
Yep. And you can choose to listen, which we hope you do. Or if you're not into the Lizzie, pick and choose which of the episodes you want to hear us talk about. And only watch certain ones.
So just before we get into Lizzie, I wanted to give a fun fact about our Even Stevens cast before, which is that George Anthony Bell, who played Principal Wexler, he did some acting. And I don't think we gave him a wrap up at the end of Even Stevens the way we did with the more main characters. But he's also apparently a dialect coach, and he's worked on a number of things, but his main one is Gilmore Girls. And I just really want to know how you get that job, because I couldn't do it because I mumble too much. But yeah. Like, do you just naturally find yourself good at enunciating and therefore you teach other people to enunciate? Do you have to be a drama teacher or something? Like,
I feel like you have to like study linguistics to a certain extent. Like, maybe not a degree in it, but you have to have some sort of background or knowledge in linguistics to become a dialect coach. Maybe.
Yeah, it's, well, because I'm like, isn't it all like the tip of the tongue, the teeth, the lips, the, like, isn't
yeah,
it all
that? Sure.
But we're well past Even Stevens. We're on to a much better series created by our Lord and Savior, Terry Minsky. And season 2 starts off with a banger called First Kiss. It's Valentine's Day. Everybody's coupled up.
Yep.
Lizzie and Miranda are jealous of everybody because they're all coupled up and they don't have anybody. But like, coincidentally, not related to Valentine's Day at all. They really did not need to open this up with Valentine's Day. Lizzie suddenly gets a crush on her paperboy.
Yep. Out of the blue.
Yeah, this little Nick Carter wannabe pops up into her life waiting. He's waiting inside the house to get paid for the paper, which is not at all how a paper route works. And so she meets him and he's cute and they start like going out, but she becomes super obsessed and her friends are so annoyed with her because she can't stop talking about him because, you know, that's what it's like when you're young and in love, right?
Yep.
But is it like, did you have that experience, Jessica?
No, because I'm not like an obsessive person. But also I think this is like how a lot of people got during middle school. Like, I never was someone who dated during middle school. But people who I did, I feel like they were couples who would only last like a week. but it was like you saw them everywhere. They were inseparable for that week because like that's before people learn what relationships are actually like. So they think that you just spend all your free time together.
Okay, yeah, you know what? My relationship in middle school was not like that, but I did have a friend who, she was actually with him for like 2 out of the 3 years of middle school, but they were inseparable.
Yeah. I think it's before people mature enough to be like, oh, in order to have a healthy relationship, you have to have your own interests and hobbies outside of each other. But in middle school, you think, oh, all I have to do is solely focus on this person.
Okay, back to this episode. So Lizzie, like some of our middle school friends that we know, gets super obsessed with this boy who doesn't go to her school. She's talking about him all the time. We start to see Gordo getting jealous, which we saw the seeds planted for in season one. And Miranda's just annoyed.
Yeah.
They have a little talk. He gives her this ring. They kiss, which is why it's named First Kiss, even though I think that's a lie because Aaron Carter kisses her in season one. But moving on. Yeah. And then one day, Ronnie shows up and he's like, we need to talk. And he tells her that there's another girl at his school who likes him and they're breaking up. And Lizzie's really hurt. But I actually think this is kind of like the perfect breakup in middle school because I think it's very mature for him to realize like they're in like a long distance relationship and he wants someone he can spend his time with.
Yeah. Yeah, it is kind of mature, but it's also like, dude, you should have never asked her to be your girlfriend and had this conversation had you known this other girl was at school. Because there's no way this episode spans more than 4 days.
I got the impression that they were together for like 1 to 2 weeks because you get the paper on Saturdays, right?
Okay, sure. Yeah, I guess that makes sense. But like you can get the paper every day.
You can. But I always got the impression that he came on Saturdays because she wasn't at school.
Yeah, okay.
So, but I guess he would come before school.
Yeah, or after school, but that seems weird because people don't deliver paper that late.
No, my logic is flawed. I got the impression it was like a week or two, but it could have been 4 days.
Okay. I got the impression it was a very short amount of time. And then he breaks up with her and she's very hurt. And then Gordo has the cutest, sweetest little moment where he almost tells Lizzie he likes her, but he doesn't. But he tells her that she's the prettiest. What does he say?
She says that the other girl at Ronnie's school is probably prettier than me and smarter than me and more fun to hang out with than me. Yeah. And he says, that's not true because no one is prettier than you or more fun to hang out with. And she goes, you forgot smarter. And he says, well, I was counting myself in that.
So cute.
It's a very cute little scene. I really enjoyed that bit.
It's a very cute scene. It definitely sets up season two for you to know that maybe there's going to be a little bit more of the Lizzie and Gordo setups that lead to the Lizzie McGuire movie kiss.
A little bit.
A lot of it. Like,
that's like all season two was.
Sure.
But for some reason, this episode feels a little bit like a season one episode to me. It still feels quite juvenile and... Even though we're showing that they're growing up and they're dating, it feels pretty young and, like, not as high production value for some reason.
No, I agree with that. I also think this episode's actually very good in transitioning from season one to season two because they come in with a hot topic, first kiss. It's kind of the first time that you see Lizzie have a crush on someone who it's actually developed and they like her back. It's not like the Ethan... It's not the Aaron Carter that was just like fake and weird. It's like actually a real crush, you know?
I can't wait till you get to the Frankie Muniz episode.
Oh, Lord. I don't know if I'm looking forward to that one.
And the way that we get more of Lizzie and Gordo setting it up for season two, we also get more of Melina, who we see briefly in season one. I didn't have you watch any of those episodes, but she is now clearly a fan favorite and back. And so we see in this first episode, Matt's obsessed with baseball cards. Melina has this one really rare one. And so he's like doing everything for her, doing her homework, doing her chores.
Yeah. Waiting on her hand and foot.
And his dad says something along the lines of he's going to feel so good when he earns it. And like having done everything he could to get something that he wants. His dad's encouraging this. And that leads Matt to trading his dad's entire baseball collection from his childhood for this one card.
Yep. And Sam is pissed.
He is, but I think Matt's only punishment is Sam just takes his baseball card collection in return, right?
Yes, yes. But it's like an appropriate punishment for a 10-year-old.
Yeah, I find that I never agree that Matt's punishments are enough until I remember how old he is. But like, Matt gets up to some real shit for a 10-year-old.
Yeah, but he's just a kid being kid. I think, you know what I mean? Like, he's just a young boy being a child. It's good birth control for me to watch that and be like, oh yeah, this is actually, but here's the thing, kids get up to those shenanigans.
Yeah, they do.
It's like,
and all of his subplots are just life lessons of why you shouldn't have kids if you aren't ready to put up with this.
Yes, seriously.
And speaking of like zany shit that kids get into, episode 2, are you ready to move into it?
Yeah, let's do it. Episode 2 is Oro de Montezuma. And this one has like kind of two parts, but Miranda, Lizzie, and Gordo are obsessed with this Spanish game show. And they're watching it and they're really into it. And they find out that Miranda's cousin is going to be on it. Carlos. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so at the last minute, all of Carlos's friends back out for some reason and aren't able to be on his team. So Miranda, Lizzie, and Gordo step in to go on the Spanish game show with Carlos and compete. It's a very wacky, zany episode. The game show makes no sense. They have to do crazy things. And they end up picking something that separates Carlos from the team so they can know. Carlos is unable to be their translator and they don't know what they're doing and they end up like putting pudding in boxes and chucking pudding at each other. And at one point Gordo's just eating the pudding. And this kind of ties back to at the beginning of the episode, we see that there's a foreign exchange student named Lee from Indonesia. And Mr. Digg, the substitute teacher, assigns a report on culture. It could be writing about your culture, writing about someone else's culture. And so Lizzie kind of asks her parents, what is our culture? What are we? And they kind of have a very white people's answer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Joe says, well, I'm from Milwaukee and your dad's from Kalamazoo, or the other way around. I feel like those are the two cities.
Yeah. And so Lizzie kind of thinks, okay, well, all of them, I think, okay, this is going to be an easy way out. We go on this game show and then we can write about this experience. Mm-hmm. But instead, Lizzie chooses her experience of being, you know, not understanding and feeling like she didn't know what was going on and struggling to communicate during the game show. She felt for Lee. And so she chose to write her paper on Indonesia for the class.
Yes. Because, like, very coincidentally, when we meet Lee, he can't speak English well and he says the same phrases over and over again and acts as if he's understanding when he's clearly not. And then Mr. Digg just happens to assign this project, you know? Yes. Maybe it was already assigned and because it's social studies. Maybe he just pulled it out of his ass. Yeah. I think that's kind of how he teaches. But in all fairness, I lessoned planned when I was a teacher, but I also kind of just pulled shit out of my ass sometimes.
I think that's part of being a teacher, is that it's like, yeah, a lot of it is planned and they put a lot of work into it. But at the same time, you just got to do stuff on the fly.
Yeah. And quick side note about teaching, one of the reasons for that is that no matter how much you plan, there will always be students who don't do what you want them to do. You have all these high expectations and they're always inevitably going to let you down in various ways. Like different groups of students, every student will let you down, but each group will let you down differently.
Really?
So you just kind of have to be able to roll with it. Otherwise, it just hurts too much. but I feel like Mr. Tig, especially as a substitute teacher, he just happens to show up and improvise all the time.
A problem I had with this episode is that don't you think Lee would have wrote his paper and did his presentation on Indonesia? So then Lizzie's just taking that from him, which I'm like, rude.
Well, he could have done it on America since that's his foreign exchange country.
Okay, I guess.
But yeah, you make a fair point. He'd probably want to teach all of his classmates about Indonesia.
Yeah, and no one knows about it better besides him.
Well, there's also the whole point of, like, she was ready to, what, write her project on Mexico because she was on one Spanish game show when her best friend is actually Mexican.
True.
Yeah. The whole premise is a little bit bonkers, but my favorite quote from it that stood out to me is when she's asking her parents. So they say the whole Kalamazoo, Milwaukee line, and then she's like, no, but where are we from? And they're like, well, I think I've got a little, like, Swedish and maybe some, I don't know what else they say, German or something, you know, European stuff. And the dad says, well, whatever I am, I'm proud to be it. And I just really... I really have a problem with this line. It is the standout line that, like, encaptures so much of how people feel when they're – it doesn't make sense culturally, heritage-wise. You're American.
Mm-hmm.
You're so far removed from whatever bloodline there is that doesn't make any sense. And I hate – I mean, I'm not – a patriotic person to begin with, but I just hate the idea of being proud of something you don't even know about. Like, what's the point?
Or that you don't understand or take the time to understand. Because I think it's different when people, like, choose to connect to their culture.
Yeah.
And choose to learn. Because that's like growing up. My parents did anything they could to keep, like, the Swedish in us alive. Like, we went to Swedish school, we were part of a Swedish Patriotic League with a bunch of other Swedes in the Bay Area. We did it's called Santa Lucia every single December. So I always felt very connected to that part of my culture. But the other things I'm not going to be like, oh, I'm proud to be German, because I've never really done anything to connect to that.
You are the only white person from America that I know who actually was connected to some sort of cultural heritage as well.
Sure. I think it's very rare. And I think that it's because my great grandma instilled it in my grandparents, and then my grandparents instilled that in their kids. It was natural for then my mom. Well, it's more my dad's side, but my dad and mom and all of my dad's siblings to participate in things related to the Swedish culture. And that's why that continued on. But it was with active effort. It's not just like, oh, I'm proud to be it. But what does that mean? And what does that entail? And what are you doing to celebrate that?
That's impressive that it was that many generations removed, though, and that you were still doing it. But yeah, for sure. Like my parents say all the time that they're proud to be Irish, but they'll say that because they're like pounding back beers, or that they're proud to be German, but like they don't do anything. They don't, like, aside from having, what is it? What's the thing you eat? Cabbage and corned beef and cabbage on St. Patrick's Day. That is the most cultural thing of any of the things that I am, that we do. And I'm a very tiny bit Irish, half German, and like a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah. It's also something, not to get into this too much, but it's also something that, like, upsets my husband a lot because my husband is he's from Scotland. He's only lived in the US for about 3 years. He moved over here on a marriage visa. Mm-hmm. And so he's Scottish through and through. And the amount, because he works in a customer service job, the amount of people that tell him, oh, I'm Scottish too. And he's like, no, you're not.
So you were saying about connecting to, like, you know, doing things to connect to your heritage. And I think you did it, your parents did it in really smart ways. But so many people will be like, you know, my dad will go to an Irish pub and say that he's proud to be Irish, as if that's like the experience. And you have to do it tastefully because there are still real people really living that every day.
Yeah. And it, like, for the most part, it does, you know, Chris just brushes it off, but sometimes it does really upset him because he's like, no, you're not Scottish. What have you done? How are you connected to the Scottish side of your family or to the Scottish culture? You're not doing anything, you know? And we make an active effort, even though it's just the two of us, we make an active effort to do things that are important to him, like making a pie at the Bells for New Year's, like a lot of the terms we use. And by a pie, I mean a meat pie. And a lot of the terms we use are UK terms, like in our casual language, because that's important to him. And if we had kids, we would continue that. But a lot of people, as you said, the more generations are removed, that kind of disappears.
Yeah. Wow. That was a whole tangent that I could keep honestly talking about, but
we need to continue on. But if you have anything, like an experience with this that you want to chime in, I would love to know your thoughts on this. So please hit us up in our DMs.
Yes. Oh, last note to say about it. I just think being blindly proud of something leads you to be blindly hateful of something else more naturally. Moving on, the side plot. Real quick, gonna touch on it. Matt and Lanny are playing hide and seek. That's it. That's the whole plot. But it's like Matt and Lanny level hide and seek. So they're shipping themselves places. They're hiding in the cupboards. They're, one of them gets on a truck. Lanny, I think, gets on. Lanny is the superior hider. And
himself in a box.
Yeah. And I just, he's so fucking extra. And I love this side plot because it really reminds you of how young they are. And also that they can literally entertain themselves in any way at a time when now, like, so many kids are being raised by iPads. It's really fun to see kids just, like, play hide and seek for a whole episode, you know?
Yeah, it's cute. All right. Episode 3, Mom's Best Friend.
So back with Mr. Diggs. He assigns a book report on mother-daughter and father-son relationships because there are only binaries in this millennium. And Lizzie reads this book about the mother-daughter relationship and she is so moved. She's crying and she tells Joe that she just really wants to be friends. So they start hanging out more. They start talking. She brings her to the digital bean. And Miranda and Gordo are like, what?
Yeah.
Mrs. McGuire, are you waiting for a drink or something? What are you doing here? And then they in turn start hanging out with their parents. They're like, oh, if Lizzie's doing it, maybe we should do it. Does not go well.
Nope.
Miranda's mom buys her a bunch of stuff because she's so excited to spend time with her child, which is a whole mood.
And then in turn Miranda feels extremely guilty.
Yeah, she's like, oh man, I guess I should do this more. Never picked up again.
Yep. And Gordo.
That's his name.
Yeah, it's true. He tries to go fishing with his dad. And his dad is like too meticulous and planned. And, you know, we need to leave at this time to get here by this time. And then we're going to start fishing at this time. And then something throws off the plans. And Gordo just kind of learns, you know, they never end up fishing. It's not all that. Like,
yeah. I don't even know why they chose fishing because those two people...
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah. But I think maybe that's what the book was about that Gordo read. I don't know.
Well, the book Gordo read was called The River Runs Through It. So potentially it was about fishing.
Okay. But so their relationships with their parents don't go well. Joe and Lizzie, on the other hand, getting along great. They start doing like pottery and stuff. But seems like a fun activity anyway. But Joe's confiding in Lizzie, and it's kind of getting to be too much for her because her little heart is so anxious, even when it's stuff that Joe tells her not to worry about. Like, Nana kind of always wants a divorce from Grandpa, and we almost had to pay, like, a lot of money for it in our taxes recently and all this stuff. And Lizzie's not ready for it, and so she has to tell her mom, like, maybe we'll wait. And I think they exchange, like, a something that they made. Joe gives her something that she's like, you can give it to me when you're ready to be friends again.
Oh, cute. I don't remember that, but cute.
Yeah. I thought it was a really cute episode. This was one of the six that I wasn't going to assign to you, so I don't have the most thoughts. I don't think there's a lot of focus on parental relationships in most children's TV that we see. So yeah. I appreciated that angle.
And Lizzie hits the parental relationships hard. And I actually think this one is very important.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, you can have a relationship with your parents. And I think that's important, especially as you get an adult. Depends on who your parents are. Some parents aren't worth having a relationship with. But for those who do have parents who are worth having a relationship with, you don't need a friendship at that age. You need your parents to be your parents, and you need to be the child. That is your job, and that is their job. And I think this is a very important ticket, like a very important subject that they, like, show.
Yeah, and that you do become more like your parents and more likely to be friends with your parents as you get older. It becomes a possibility. You kind of go through, like, the teenager phase where you don't want to be friends and then you can become friends. But
yep,
it's an interesting dynamic to try to relay, and I like that it ends with her saying not yet, because she is still too young realistically.
Yeah, I think it's really important. Meanwhile, Matt and Lanny getting up to no good. There's a chimp,
but it's not their fault.
It's not their fault this time. There's a chimp. It's running around. It's throwing shit. It's destroying rooms. And every single time Sam comes in to check on Matt and Lanny, the chimp has come in, wrecked an entire room, and disappears mysteriously. And so the blame gets put on Matt and Lanny. So they set up this elaborate trap to trap Sam so he can finally see the chimp.
They set up an elaborate trap for the chimp. Sam just falls in it.
No, but then they say later that the trap was actually meant for Sam.
Oh, I did not catch that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hilariously, the chimp, Alfredo is his name. He is the pet of these two guys who I like in my head to think are gay because they're always together, from Sam's softball team. So if he knows of someone who owns a chimp, I don't know why it's so outlandish to him that there could be one
around.
Yeah.
I agree. Also, the backyard. I've said it before. I'll say it again. They get into a lot of shenanigans with the chimp in the backyard. I don't understand the backyard. I don't understand its depth. We see a fence sometimes, but then the amount of things they get up to and how much space this chimp runs around in, it makes no sense for a backyard in the LA area. Don't get it.
I want to call this a trope time, but I feel like I need something softer. Oh. It's just a reoccurring thing.
Okay.
Is that... Okay, I was trying to think of... I was looking up Disney Channel shows in particular, though. I think this happens throughout children's entertainment. Is that a lot of times when there are animals, when there are pets, they're ridiculous and things that are largely illegal to have. And I don't really know why that is, other than it's a funny touch. But while I was looking up Disney Channel shows to think of all the ones where this happens, I realized that in most shows they don't even have pets, which I found even weirder.
Well, having animals on set is really difficult. You have to bring in a trainer. It costs money. The trainer has to be on set the entire time the animal is there in case anything happens. even if it's a dog or a cat. So I think having animals on set is really hard, which is why a lot of shows don't do it, because they probably just don't have the budget to have an animal on set.
That's fair. That actually does make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So then when they do have them, they make them ridiculous because there's the chimp in this, in Jesse. We have Mrs. Kipling, who is a freaking Komodo dragon. Also, like, need to think about, because the Komodo dragons only live on one island in Indonesia, and Ravi's from India, and I don't, like, I'm not surprised at all that Disney would make the cultural disparity, but I don't know how Disney would get an actual Komodo dragon, because that seems illegal, but I know that Karen Barr, I think his name is, the guy who played Ravi, said there was an actual dragon on set some days, and he was not allowed to get close to it, which made it very hard to film.
Which makes sense.
But so there's that. The other show that features a main pet is Dog with a Blog, which is a talking dog that has a blog.
Yep.
Or Kim Possible with Rufus the Naked Mole Rat, like, which doesn't have the set thing, just a ridiculous.
Yeah.
I don't know. But we see Alfredo again.
Yes, we do. A few times.
Yes. We have no seamless transition into episode 4.
Episode 4, Rise and Fall of the Kate Empire. Kate falls off the top of the pyramid while the cheerleading squad is doing a cheer at lunch. She ends up dislocating her shoulder, and so she can't cheer. The cheerleaders end up, like, basically telling Kate, like, she's no longer cheer captain because she can't cheer. She's not on the cheer team. They completely, like, isolate her and make her think that she's on her own.
Mm-hmm.
She ends up eating lunch on the grass by herself, and Claire ends up becoming the cheer captain and is, like, really rude and really mean to Kate. And Lizzie and Gordo and Miranda start feeling really bad for Kate. So Lizzie offers to teach Kate some of her rhythmic gymnastics one-handed stunts that she learned. Mm-hmm. And so Kate ends up learning them quite curiously, because Lizzie actually doesn't teach. She just does them, and then Kate just does them and sucks, and then does them and suddenly becomes good, which is not how that would work.
Kate does it, can't do it. Lizzie does it, and then Kate tries again, and then she can do it all of a sudden. And it's like a round off and a cartwheel. There may have been something else in there.
Isn't there back handspring? Is that a thing?
Well, I know that Hillary can do a round off back handspring. I don't know if she taught Kate to do one, because a one-handed back handspring sounds really hard.
Oh yeah, I don't think that's a thing.
I'm sure it's a thing for some, like, adrenaline junkies, but yep. I don't think Kate did one, or Kate's stunt double, because it was definitely not the same actress.
Yep.
There were some moments. But yeah, so part of where they help her, Claire is, like, Kate's only friend, and yet Claire is the one who forces her out of the squad because she can't do anything. And we see before all of this, they were regulated, so to speak. The cheerleaders ruled lunchtime, and no one could sit at the best table outdoors, which was where the cheerleaders sat. Gordo tries, and they look at him, they're like, excuse me?
Yeah.
What do you think you're doing? And then when Claire kicks out Kate and becomes the top dog, she decides that no one can sit at any of the tables. They're all reserved for the cheerleaders and the other cool kids, and everybody has to eat lunch in the grass. And they all hate this, which, as a couple of Californians, we find hilarious because we chose to eat in the grass.
Yeah. Also, like, our schools were so big where we grew up that, like, they didn't have enough tables for all the students.
No.
So, most people didn't eat lunch at a table. So it was hilarious to us, because we were like, what? Like, no one actually ate at a table ever.
Yeah, it became like the nerdy people ate at tables.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's cute. I like to see them helping Kate. And then at the end, there is this moment where Claire and Kate confront each other. So Claire then injures herself as soon as Kate shows that she can do stuff, and they're like ready for Kate to not have learned anything because Kate is the devil, as is the message of Lizzie McGuire. And instead of completely shunning Claire the way that Claire had done to Kate, she lets her sit at the cheerleaders table and still hang out with them, and shows that she did learn a little bit about friendship. I just felt really bad for Kate this whole episode.
Yeah, it makes you feel bad for Kate. But then, of course, like, I feel like the evil part of me is like, well, did she kind of deserve that? Did she need this lesson? But does any child need that lesson? Probably not. But
what's the lesson? Like, how to be a friend?
The lesson is that if you bully other people and surround yourself with people who are okay with your bullying, what makes you think that those people aren't going to bully you back when you're suddenly in not as high of a position or in a vulnerable position? She surrounds herself with people who are equally as bad as her. And so why would she expect friendship from them if they put up with her being a horrible person?
I just felt bad because she doesn't have a friend.
I know, and this is kind of a running thing throughout the entire series of Lizzie, that you see these moments where Kate mentions that she doesn't really have true friends like Lizzie, Miranda, and Gordo do.
Mm-hmm.
Matt's plot, this is, I think, an iconic Matt plot. He is in the school play with his one line, "Ah, the doorbell, I'll get that." And this school play with his one line turns Matt into an absolute diva. And he ends up hurting his voice. And so then Lanny has to fill in for Matt.
And this is his punishment after he ostracizes Lanny, after he is very rude to his mother, asking for specific snacks and talking down to her. I really don't think losing his voice was enough of a punishment. Joe would disagree with me.
Yep. Also, this is when we start to see that, like, Joe has no concept of anything if it's not in bulk. The bowl of trail mix that she brings out to Matt and Lanny is like a salad bowl. Like, it is huge, full of trail mix for 2 10-year-olds. I'm like, how much trail mix did you think they were going to eat? Nuts are filling. Like, I don't understand. And her bulk obsession continues.
Yes, it does. And it becomes more apparent in our next episode. That was a nice.
I didn't even plan it.
Wait, is it the next episode?
No, it's not the next one. I think it's a couple episodes down. But
I made a note of it. Where is it?
Next episode, I'm going to transition anyway, is episode 5, Working Girl. Lizzie asks for a raise on her allowance. Her parents say no. So she ends up getting a job at the Digital Bean as a busboy. She hates it. She absolutely hates it. But she does it. But just like all the little things start to get to her and to annoy her. And she has a really hard day. And her manager is just mean and rude and not appreciative of all the cleaning and serving and everything that she's doing. So Kate and Claire come in and they bully her. They make her trip and fall. She has to refill the ketchup bottles. And ketchup is getting everywhere, which I want to get into, but not yet. And she loses it. She goes on a rampage, screaming at everyone, and she ends up getting fired.
Yeah, but she's really speaking up for herself in this rampage, and I really felt it because I, too, hate capitalism.
Yeah. Also, she's not a busboy. Like,
she's doing everything.
She should have asked for a job description. Because she's not a busboy. She's bringing food to people. That would be a food runner. I work in hospitality. I can tell you all the different names of those jobs. She's a busboy.
She's busing, but she's also serving. She's doing a lot.
She's a food runner. Like, she's doing so much. She's doing multiple people's jobs. She's also prepping, which normally the servers do that.
Mm-hmm.
So she's doing it all.
And the manager does say that she goes through, like, 3 busboys a week, a month?
Something like that. I think it maybe is a month. Three Best Boys a week sounds a little intense.
Yeah, but it was said to be intense.
Sure. But to me, if you're going through that many Best Boys, whether it's a week or a month, honestly, if you're going through three Best Boys a year, you're a bad person. You are a bad manager. Mm-hmm. It's not the people you're hiring. It is you.
You know what's weird to me is that I did not remember the digital bean at all.
What do you mean?
Like, until we started rewatching, I did not remember the digital bean as a part of Lizzie McGuire's set. And it's actually, like, a really common set.
Mm-hmm. It's like if they're not at the school or they're not in their homes or talking on the phone, they're probably at the digital bean. I want to talk about the ketchup situation. Please explain to me. So there's a big thing of ketchup, and Lizzie is refilling the small little ketchup bottles with the ketchup, and ketchup ends up everywhere. How? How? It's all over her. Lizzie, the problem is you. Whatever you're doing to pour the ketchup in is not efficient, because I don't understand how you would end up with that much ketchup on yourself.
That's so funny.
It really bothered me.
It really was everywhere.
It was everywhere. It's ridiculous.
The stunts were a bit zany in this one. Yep. There was more physical comedy. The things that happened to her were a little bit ridiculous. But I will say I liked this plot line a lot, because I appreciated how real this episode was, in that it wasn't the usual. Usually when kids get a job, it's because they want more money and their parents say, well, go get a job. In this, she asked for more money and her parents said no. And so she says, okay, I'm going to be independent and I'm going to go get a job. And there are multiple points where her parents are like, you're young. You don't
need one.
Yeah, she even doesn't tell them until after she gets it, because she knows that they're going to be kind of opposed to it. And they are, and they repeatedly tell her, like, you don't need to be doing this.
Yeah.
It wasn't glamorized. She doesn't now have a job for the rest of the season. It's not her thing. It doesn't work out. It very much does not work out, because having a job is hard and children should be children.
Yep. And this might be my least favorite Matt plotline.
Really?
Matt gets a crush on Miranda and it's creepy. He's obsessed with her. He fills her room with heart balloons. And then at the end, Melina just shows up and is back in Matt's life. And he no longer has a crush on Miranda, because Melina is back to fill that void.
Well, because Melina stops picking on Matt. So he's like, oh, it's like she's picking on someone else. And so he's like, oh, no, she's moved on. Yeah. And Miranda's like, don't worry, Matt, you're a great kid. And he's like, you really think so? And then he becomes obsessed with her. And I really relate to that, like, clasping on to the slightest ounce of validation, you know?
Sure.
Running with it.
I don't know. I didn't like it.
It's creepy. And he gets monogrammed t-shirts and he goes way overboard. But my absolute favorite part of this, Miranda never tells Lizzie, by the way. She's like, Lizzie's got enough going on. This is a Miranda Gordo plotline with Matt, which is kind of a unique dynamic. I enjoy it. Gordo's just there to laugh at her. He's like, why don't you just tell him you just want to be friends? And then she tries, and Matt's like, so do you want to go out? But my favorite part is when he starts to like Miranda, or he says something that's like a lot, reveals something to her when they're at the digital bean, and she goes, I need a drink. And she literally sounds like a child alcoholic or an adult alcoholic.
Yeah.
Like, it's delivered the same way that the girls in the bold type deliver it 5 times an episode.
Yeah. Episode 6. And the winner is?
The trio is fighting and we don't really know why. Mm-hmm. It's not revealed at first. It comes later. And I don't know if this one had to have been planned, but Mr. Diggs puts them on a scavenger hunt. I don't know why either.
It seems like I don't know. I don't remember anything like this happening in middle school, but like the fact that they're on a scavenger hunt, like not around the school. No, they're like going to a hot dog stand and like in the mall and at the Digital Bean, and like Mr. Diggs is everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And at the park. And I'm like, you just sent 13-year-olds, or maybe they're 14 in this episode. I don't know. The timeline in this season is weird. Sometimes they're 13, sometimes they're 14. But even if they're 14 in this episode, you send a bunch of 14-year-olds around town on their own all day long, and the parents aren't pissed about this?
Without permission slips?
Yeah.
Or, yeah, it's without permission slips.
And they don't have chaperones.
What class is this for? History?
I don't know.
There's some history or social science type questions.
All I know is that whoever wins the scavenger hunt gets mm-hmm. an A for the rest of the semester.
Yes. And because our trio is fighting, they each pair up with other people. Kate swoops in on Gordo because he's smart and he's going to get that A. Lizzie somehow ends up with Ethan. And then Miranda is stuck with Larry Tejman because no other students go to this school. It's only those six people.
Yep.
So the three of them are all paired up. They're all going about it. Larry's obviously smart. Lizzie's pulling the weight with Ethan. Miraculously, the three of the pairs are at a pretty good pace with each other, despite the fact that it's like basically Lizzie versus Larry and Gordo. She's got her moments for sure.
And it makes no sense because Gordo and Kate are shopping the entire time the scavenger hunt is happening. Like by the end of the scavenger hunt, Gordo is carrying like 13 shopping bags for Kate. And I'm like, how have they managed to keep up with the scavenger hunt while doing all this shopping? Had they not done the shopping, Gordo and Kate would have kicked ass.
But they're still somehow following along though. And then Lizzie and Ethan are wearing rollerblades and the other people say that they're cheating. And I actually think that that's super smart because they have to go all around LA. Why wouldn't they wear rollerblades?
Yeah, they're 14. They can't drive.
Yeah. And so they are doing a scavenger hunt. And as it's happening, of course, the three people are like ranting to their partners about what happened and their side of the story. And it's some weird convoluted thing where Lizzie went to the Digital Bean. She called Miranda to tell Gordo, to text Gordo that it was happening and to the three of them to come. But I think like Miranda sent the text, but it didn't go through, or something happened where like Miranda couldn't go and no one ended up telling Gordo. So Gordo's mad that no one told him, and Lizzie's mad that they all left her at the bean and
by herself.
Like, Miranda's mad that they're blaming her for like technological failures. I still don't fully understand what went wrong, but all three of their partners, Kate, Ethan, and Larry, tell them like,
the fight is stupid and is not worth the friendship.
It's stupid, and I wish I had friends like your two friends. And this is just reiterating the fact that no one else goes to the school, and or no one in this school has real friends.
Yeah, but isn't that middle school?
No, I had great friends in middle school.
Oh. I've always had friends problems. I had good friends in middle school, but I also was someone who had friend problems in middle school. Like, I had to work through who was the right people to be hanging out with. Basically, like, not to get into it, but I was in the principal's office a lot in, like, 4th through 8th grade because of the friends that I associated myself with.
I'm sorry to hear that. I think I was in the principal's office once in middle school, and that was the only time I've ever been. I was also once in 5th grade because I was blowing my nose a lot, and when I did that, my shirt went up and you could see my belly button, and the principal just happened to be in our classroom at the same time that that happened, so she asked me to go to her office just to tell me that I probably shouldn't wear that shirt again.
That pisses me off, and I'm not prepared to get into that. However, I think this is a real thing. Like, kids in middle school, you're going through a lot of change. You're unsure of who you are, how you identify, what's happening to your body, what's happening to you as a person. and picking and choosing friends that fit you is very difficult. So to have that strong of a friend trio, I think it makes sense that these people are very, like, I don't want to say envious, but they're like, hey, you need to understand what you have. You have great friends, and this dumb fight that makes no sense is not worth losing them over.
Yes, I agree. And it's really sweet. And even Ethan, they're like, maybe he knows something. And so while this is all happening, Mr. Diggs made a map that looks like a treasure map for them. And Matt's like, bro, we're going on a treasure hunt. And Sam's like, that's for Lizzie's project. And he goes, okay, I guess I'm going alone. And Matt ends up winning. Matt makes it through. And he asks what his prize was. And Mr. Diggs is like, you don't go to this school. And so he gives him 43 cents and a bus token. And Matt goes, cool, I'll take it. And then I think... So Lizzie apologizes right before they're all about to, because they, all three of them, of course, get to the finish line at the same time.
Yeah.
And so she stops. So she goes, wait, I'm sorry. And they all get to it. Meanwhile, the other three are like, really? This is the moment? This is the moment. Really? And they all three cross together. What if all six of us can get A's for the rest of the semester? And Mr. Diggs goes, no, two other people. He throws out names I've never heard and will never hear again. Already got here. No.
Yeah. And no one gets an A. But they're friends.
Yeah. It's sweet. And also, I always wished that someone would set up a scavenger hunt like that for me.
I'm down with the scavenger hunt. I'm not down that it was middle schoolers participating in it.
For sure. For sure. Episode 7, The Longest Yard.
Joe and Sam are going to the Super Sports Expo because I feel like we don't know a lot about Sam, but one thing we do know is he loves his sports.
Because he's a man.
Yep. And Lizzie has to stay home to watch Matt, which she's pretty, like, upset about and a little bit of a brat about, because she's like, I had plans.
Which is kind of funny because in the first season, she, like, there's a whole episode where she convinces them that she's responsible enough to babysit Matt.
Oh, I don't think I watched that one.
I don't think you did. Sam ends up spying on them and, like, they set all these traps and it's a whole Home Alone episode. Anyway.
Cute.
But that's the only other time we see her watch Matt. And then this comes around and she's like, what? Really? No. What?
She's pissed. She does not want to do it. She's very bratty about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so Matt and Lanny are playing football in the backyard and ends up, like, getting stuck into the trees. So then they're like, oh, we need another football. And so then they look at Sam's prized football that's signed by Walter Payton. And it ends up getting smashed. A bowling ball falls on it and it's, like, completely flat and the seam is ripped at one part. And so they sneak out to try and get it fixed. Lizzie finds out that they sneaked out. So then her and Miranda are trying to go find Matt and Lanny because she's like, oh my God, I was in charge of them. And now they're who knows where. While Gordo is at, he gets the job of staying at the house holding down the fort while they go try to find everyone. Lizzie ends up trading the smashed Walter Payton football for a signed Dick Butkus football. And they come home. Sam notices it immediately. And I think the best part of this episode is that Joe goes, why didn't you just sign it? I can't believe you went to all this effort of getting another signed football. I dropped the football into the fire, like, last month, and I just bought a plain football and signed it myself.
Yeah, she's, like, proud of them. She's like, you, I think she goes, you kids are really something else.
Yeah, she was impressed that they went to all of that effort when she's like, oh, I just signed it myself. I took the easy way out.
Do you remember why Matt and Lanny sneak out?
No.
So they sneak out because Lizzie's being such a brat about watching him that she tells them, don't talk to me.
Don't talk. Don't bother me.
Don't bother me. She instills it in them. Whatever you do, don't bother me. And she has Miranda and Gordo come over. And they take that very seriously. They respect that. Yep. They're mature little kids. And so they decide that this is their problem. They made the mess. They're going to fix it on their own. So it's kind of like a cute little lesson about like sibling relationships wrapped up in this other lesson about just like being honest with your parents. Or I don't know, Joe kind of made me feel like you could just do whatever, like you could get away with it more easily.
Yeah. Well, and also that like your parents get up to the same amount of shenanigans that kids do, I think, is mm-hmm. what this episode shows. I also like that this episode to me is the only one other than Aaron Carter episode where the Matt plot line and the Lizzie plot line is like one giant group. Like, yes, in episode 6 of this season, Matt's on the scavenger hunt too, but none of the scenes are intermixed. It's still his own journey. Where this plot line, it's the first since the Aaron Carter episode that we get them all kind of together. And I kind of like these episodes. It feels fun.
Yeah. There's another one where it gets close in season one, but it's still where they're like hanging out, but they're still separate for the most part. So I can appreciate it too, seeing the dynamics more.
Yeah. And we also, get... Continue, sorry. Mm-hmm.
I was just going to point out my little note that there's this moment where Gordo, because he gets stuck being home in case someone calls, and he's like, ugh, why do you always have all the fun? I'm just stuck here with cable and video games and a fridge full of food. And like, I felt so seen as a viewer because that's all I need in life.
Yep. And he made himself this like disgustingly huge sandwich, and then he doesn't eat it, which pissed me off. I was like, so much waste.
Well, yeah, well, teenagers.
We get sibling love between Matt and Lizzie in this episode, which I feel we don't get the sibling love between the two of them as much as we got between Lewis and Wren and even Stevens. And so when we do get it in Lizzie, it's very sweet and I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Lewis and Wren are 1 year apart. Matt and Lizzie are about 3 years apart.
Yeah.
That makes all the difference, apparently.
Yeah. So we get it less, which I feel is appropriate given the age gap, right? They're not at the same school. Their friend groups are completely different. They don't really know the same people. But when we do get those like moments of true like sibling love, it's very sweet.
And we'll get it again in episode 9. But first, we have to get to episode 8.
Yep.
We're going to go chronologically when we go through these episodes. And that means that we're going to get zany when we get to the second half of this season. Because the timeline is worse than the MCU. But episode 8, Just Friends. Gordo and Miranda encourage Lizzie to finally tell Ethan how she feels. And he's straight up, very respectfully, is like, oh, I've just never thought of you that way. Like, very valid. But Lizzie and Gordo cannot respect boundaries. So Gordo, like, goes up to him and asks really awkwardly what he's into in girls. And Ethan says he's into the mysterious type. And so Lizzie dolls herself up like in a very stereotypical mystery novel girl type of way, like beyond a Bond girl. She's more like, she's all in like slinky dresses and saying weird things, and it's just,
and like tight fitting, like tight fitting knee length coats that have like a belt.
It kind of reminds me of how, and I forgot that this was a thing until just now, I remember hearing a lot that girls liked, or boys liked girls who were hard to get.
Yep.
Who were playing hard to get. And we see this a little bit in some other shows later on. I know this comes up a little bit in Hannah, but this is almost like a cartoonish, a caricature of that idea, that she has to be like aloof and mysterious to him.
Yep.
But it doesn't work.
It doesn't work. She tries everything, and then she gets really, really upset when Ethan still is like, I just see you as a friend.
He's like, oh, I thought I was pretty clear before.
Yep.
And this is all for the Sadie Hawkins dance, which I think we didn't say. But anyway, this is for the Sadie Hawkins dance, which I also kind of need to go on a little rant about. Can I go on a little rant about this?
About the Sadie Hawkins dance or how they literally have 47 school dances in Lizzie McGuire?
Not about that. We had lots of dances in middle school. I loved it. Okay, number one, Ethan was very much in his right, and Lizzie and Gordo were being disrespectful. And if someone tells you that they just don't see you that way, they just don't see you that way. Move on. Don't fucking push it. Number two, Sadie Hawkins dances are kind of like, they felt empowering when we were kids, kind of, because it was, you know, the girls ask the guys, which is so different. But like, also, maybe this is because it's 20 years later, abolish them. You know when they started becoming a thing? In the 30s, when men were expected to always ask women and it was indecent. But now, ask whoever you want to any dance. And also, so many of us aren't men or women, and it's just destroyed the gender binary and the misogyny. Even though it's a female empowerment thing, it feels misogynistic that we are allocated one dance a year.
I agree.
End rant.
Ask whoever you want, whenever you want. The only note I have is that Ethan's a grape soda guy, and, you know, it makes sense. Of course he's a grape soda guy.
It does make sense. I also I have to point out my absolute favorite line, I think, from the show.
Oh,
the
wow.
Way that the Even Stevens was, we miss you right away, is in this one. The first time she goes to talk to Ethan, she comes up to him, says hi, and he goes, Lizzie, my day is proceeding with fineness.
Yeah.
And it's, the delivery is so good. The words together would never have put them together, but it makes sense.
Yep. And it's so Ethan the way he says it too.
Whoever wrote that line of dialogue is a genius, because you really have to be thinking outside of yourself to write something so abnormal.
Yep. It's a good one. It is a good one. And it's just so in line with his character, because the things he says, they just roll off his tongue. But then you're like, I would never pair those words together. I think we get a huge lesson in this one, which we, like, yes, we've touched on. But if someone tells you they're not into you, you do not need to change yourself for anyone. You need to come to the self-realization that there are other people out there that will be into you.
I didn't really like that it was less about, well, they're just not into you, and more about, you don't need to change yourself. It kind of was both, but those feel like different lessons.
Yeah. I think it needs to be both. That it's like, you do not need to change yourself for anybody.
Mm-hmm.
But also, if someone tells you they are not interested, it is not appropriate to continue to try to change their mind because you don't like what they're telling you.
To almost pressure them into changing their minds.
Yes.
Yeah. There's even a point where Joe is telling her story about how she did this when she was young, like changing herself for someone else. And in the end, it didn't matter. And Lizzie goes, why are you telling me this?
Yeah.
And then her mom tells her, like, you know, sometimes changing for people just doesn't work or something. I don't know. She tells her the point and she goes, oh, I guess it just didn't work for you.
Yeah. She doesn't take it in at all.
Yeah.
We get a really dumb Matt plot line, so I'm just going to give it to you real quick. I don't want to get into it. Matt and Lanning are trying to think of a way to make money, so they're blending up this concoction in the blender. They call it a supersonic tonic. A ton of people are in their backyard drinking, lounging, hanging out. The bully Sonny gets pissed that they're making money and everyone is at Matt and Lanning's house. And so he basically threatens them and makes them give him the recipe, and Matt gives him a fake recipe.
And Larry is a regular at this place, at this establishment.
Yeah. They make. I forgot about that, but yes, he is.
And at the end of the episode, when Lizzie doesn't have a date to the Sadie Hawkins, and Gordo doesn't have one. They like dance at this backyard location as it's being shut down.
Piano.
Yes, because Lanny can do anything.
Yeah. Doesn't talk, but everything else, he's got you covered.
So, back into our sibling dynamics. Episode 9, those freaky McGuires. You thought you knew Freaky Friday from Lindsay Lohan. But this is a Lizzie Freaky Friday. And this is a full year before the Lindsay Lohan one. I did look it up. And yes, Disney cannot stop making Freaky Friday adaptations. They've made like 4 movies of it, as well as this episode. So Matt and Lizzie get into a huge fight in the middle of the night over like laundry or something.
Yeah.
And they scream at each other, "I'll stay out of your life," at the same exact time.
Well, I do have to touch on what Matt did to make Lizzie mad, because it's justifiable. He takes all of her dirty clothes out of the laundry hamper and puts them on hangers and hangs them back up in her closet.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
It's pretty bad.
That's quite bad, yeah. So,
like, I would be pissed about if someone did that to me now as an adult in my late 20s, you know?
Yeah. So I made the mistake of like making oat milk and then spilling it all over the floor and getting little oat bits everywhere, and I got it all over my towels that I used to clean it up. But then I washed washed a sheet and also this shirt in the same load, and I hand washed all my clothes with the towels, and so I went to put the shirt on today and it was covered in oats. So gross. I understand how Lizzie feels.
Yep.
Smart. I cleaned off the oats, don't worry. Anyway, so they get into a huge fight and they scream in the middle of the night, "I'll stay out of your life," at each other, and then their souls go and they now have to live out their lives as each other. They both dress in ridiculous clothes. Matt as Lizzie puts on this giant pink coat and like I think like snakeskin boots or something.
He
definitely puts on heels. Lizzie as Matt dresses like an absolute nerd, slicked back hair and sweater vest and everything. I also really like your notes on this because you summarized and you put the name of the body and not the soul.
Yes. Well, yes. I figured it was easy that way. At least for me. I also like that Matt at lunch tells Melina and Lenny, tells Melina and Lanny that he is Lizzie, and they just believe him. They're like, yep, makes sense.
Well, Lizzie as Matt tells them that, yes.
Yes, yes.
She says something to make them believe them, him, her.
Yep.
I think. Or they're just like, well, I know she's a very different Matt. She's like not pranking anyone. She's being respectful to people.
She's upset that she got detention.
Mm-hmm. 3 months of detention for something she didn't even do.
Yeah.
Or was it 3 weeks?
I think maybe it was 3 weeks of detention. But Melina and Lanny are like, we always get blamed for things we don't do. That just comes with who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And Lizzie as Matt is like very upset about this. And that's kind of when, you know, Lizzie as Matt is like, I'm Lizzie. And they're like, okay, makes sense.
Yeah. Because 10-year-olds can believe anything. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Matt as Lizzie is just like becoming a popular version of Lizzie. People are like, wow, look at how confident she is no matter what she's wearing. And then she's standing up to Kate and she's talking to Ethan she makes friends with, I think, Ethan and some of the other guys, right? Because she's like acting like a guy because she's Matt.
Yeah.
And he pulls this epic bean prank on Kate.
Yeah. He pulls this epic prank and a big old bucket of beans ends up falling on Kate's head. And it's pretty hilarious. Because she deserves it.
Yeah. So he's having a very different day. They don't really touch on how he's doing in her classes, but that's fine. And then at the end of the day, they like have a moment together and they're scared they're going to stay this way. And then they switch back.
Yep. Like in the middle of the night.
There's so, literally no point to this episode except that they.
There's no point. And also, I do have to say, this is probably some of the worst acting we get. Because as characters, we see them grow in their characters. Hilary Duff becomes a good Lizzie McGuire. Forgive me, I don't remember the actor's name who plays Nat.
Thomas. Jake Thomas.
And Jake Thomas grows into Matt and becomes a pretty good Matt, and they're comfortable in their characters. We have to remember these are kids who are acting. So then to be asked, after having this many seasons of knowing their character, to then be each other, you can tell it's outside their acting comfort zones. They're just not at that level of actors yet. And so it's not the best acting.
That's interesting. I didn't find the acting to be that jarring, but I found the writing to be kind of lazy. Because there's this one line that I'm looking for, because I didn't write it down. I thought I might ask you about it later. There, where Matt, as Lizzie, says, "And personally, I'm insulted you besmirched my character." Matt's 10 years old, and he's smart. But I'm not even entirely sure I know what the word besmirched means.
Yeah, sure.
So for him to just pull that out,
yep,
is maybe that's him trying to seem older, but it felt really weird for me.
Yeah. It doesn't feel authentic.
So maybe stick with the Lindsay one, but okay, just as like just knowing that Lindsay and Hillary had all this like career drama, it gave me a little life to know that this episode existed, because I didn't know that it existed until I watched it. And I was like,
it's a kooky episode. It's a fun one.
Disney, come up with something else.
Yeah, they don't. I'm sure we're going to get plenty more. All right. Yeah. Episode 10. In Miranda, Lizzie does not trust.
Oh my God, such whiplash between episodes, because episode 9 is outlandish Freaky Friday and episode 10 is the realest shit ever.
So it's so real.
So Miranda and Lizzie are hanging out at the mall. Miranda's playing with a bunch of the lipsticks and she accidentally drops some. She puts them back and the mall cop accuses her of stealing. And then he finds one in her bag that she bought the other day.
Yep. And she's there trying to defend herself. And she's like, "Lizzie, you were with me. Like, you know, I bought this one the other day." And Lizzie does not speak up for Miranda and actually kind of like backs herself out of the situation and kind of believes the mall cop and doesn't believe her friend. And this really, really hurts Miranda. Because she's like, "How can you be my friend and not trust me?"
Yeah, Lizzie is like, "Well, you were at the lipstick salon and you were just talking about them and whatnot." And so Mr. Digg, who's now subbing PE, it's dance. He forces Lizzie and Miranda to be partners for the final dance and improvise. They were partners already, and then they chose other partners because they were fighting, and then both of their partners were absent for the final dance or something like that. So he goes, "Looks like we have this duo again," and they have to improvise, and they end up kind of like fighting, and it has to be broken up. And I think in the end, Lizzie feels guilty enough that she apologizes to Miranda. And then we see Miranda being accused of cheating on her book report and using whatever they call it, that's the equivalent of Spark Notes.
Yeah, I don't remember what they call it, but it's Spark Notes. That's what they're referring to.
Yeah, and the teacher's saying, "You just got all this information off of Spark Notes." And Lizzie pops in and says, like, "She's not a cheater and she wouldn't do that," and totally stands up for herself. And then Miranda's like, "Okay, but I did do this one."
Yeah. She's like, "I just didn't have time to read it."
Yeah. this episode felt really fucked up. And on a friendship level, but also kind of having the one person of color be the one accused of, like, maybe that makes it more real that Lizzie didn't believe her as opposed to the other way around, but it felt even more fucked up.
No, I feel that now, having like a 2021 lens and an adult lens where we understand dynamics better, I think the racial dynamics really come to play in this. Of course, the mall cop accuses the white mall cop, accuses the one person of color of stealing, and the white friend, being Lizzie, does not stand up for Miranda. And it's like, what part of like your of raising of Lizzie and just like what Lizzie was taught and has been told living in the society that we all live and grow up in caused her to subconsciously not believe Miranda? And it's hard to not believe that, of course, it had something to do with race.
Yeah, it felt fucked up, but if they had reversed the roles, it would have also been probably sugarcoating it more, you know? I don't think that the kids watching this would see it in the same way that we do. I guess as adults, it feels very smart. It feels more accurate.
It feels more realistic, but it is a really hard episode as an adult to rewatch.
It's really painful to watch Miranda go through that.
Yeah, and especially as an adult now, feel free to disagree, but at least from corporations and stores, I don't believe stealing is wrong. I don't think you should steal from individuals, but if you are put in a position where you need to steal and you have to steal from a store, I do not think that is wrong. And so being an adult watching it all go down like this, and I'm like, oh, this is just, it's just bad. It's bad, but also it's very realistic.
I would say don't steal from small businesses.
But yes, don't. Yes, yes. Don't steal from small businesses, but if you have to steal from a large corporation, it's really not that big.
We have a subplot that is the complete tonal opposite.
Wait, before we get into the subplot, can I just comment on one small thing?
Absolutely.
This is the second time in this season that the boys and the girls are assigned different books to read. And I don't understand.
When does that happen?
At the end, when Miranda writes her book report, there's like a small conversation on how, you know, the women had to read a certain book, and then the boys had to read another book. I didn't write what book was what, but also in the mother, daughter, father, son episode, we get this where they read different books. And I just don't get it. Like, I cannot remember a single time that the girls were assigned to read one book and the boys were assigned to read the other. Everyone just reads the same damn book.
Yeah, I've never had that happen. And part of me is thinking, did these teachers adapt by assigning non-binary people their own book? Or did they just realize that everyone should have the same book?
Yeah.
We're the Lizzie McGuire teachers of 2021.
Yeah. Where's Mr. Dig now?
But the opposite subplot is that Matt and Lanny start a web show, and then Sam like stumbles onto their set in the basement, I think it is, and he like gets injured and they get lots of views, which, by the way, they have this like funky map of the US that lights up whenever people start watching them. And for some reason, when Sam starts doing something ridiculous, it lights up a whole bunch more, which is not at all how these things work. Sure. Not at all. Like, not even not how the tracking works. But people don't just go, oh, like you don't know something funny is happening, so you wouldn't just click in at that moment.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? But yes. Anyway, it's a live web show. This is how it happens. So Sam becomes a reoccurring character who's like full on clowning it up, dressed as a clown sometimes, I believe. And Lanny really doesn't like it. And so he ends up like kind of dipping out of the show, I think.
Yeah, he's like really upset and he ends up leaving the show. And then I think they have some sort of like reconciliation where they like are like, you know, they have a little conversation when where Lainey's like, I don't like what you did. And Matt's, well, you know, Lainey doesn't speak, but that's what he means. And Matt's like, you know, I was just trying to get us views and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I think we see Matt and Lainey fight a number of times, but I think this is one of the times where Matt is like, well, if we're not both happy, then we should do something else.
Yep. Next episode. Episode 11. Over the Hill. Lizzie has a nightmare where she is, let's say, flash forward like 20 years or so, maybe 30 years.
They all have gray hair in this.
She doesn't have gray hair.
She does. It's like the purple silver hair, and Gordo has gray speckles and stuff.
No, I don't think that's... Okay, well, they flash forward some amount of years in Lizzie's nightmare. She's working at Big Burger Planet. Miranda's this famous concert violinist, which Miranda plays the violin, question mark?
She does.
Oh, okay.
This nightmare doesn't come out of nowhere. This is because she's on the phone with Miranda and Gordo, and she wants to hang out. And Gordo's like, I have to work on my movie. And Miranda's like, I have violin lessons for my recital.
Oh, okay.
And so Lizzie freaks out that, like, her friends have skills and talents, and she has nothing.
Yep. And Gordo's this famous director. In the dream. And she wakes up, and she has this crisis of, I don't know what I want to be when I grow up. Everyone else has these talents. I don't have anything that I'm good at. She even gets mad at her parents at one point for not forcing her to continue rhythmic gymnastics, even though she specifically told them, I don't like this and I don't want to do it.
Yeah, I think her dad's like, you hated it.
Yeah, and you told us that you hated it.
Yeah, she has this whole conversation with them where it's mostly at night. I mostly remember this episode being at night. And I know there's a moment where she's like trying to, shortly after the nightmare, where she's trying to like pick possible occupations out of a hat, but they're all like marine biologist and actress or something, like big things. And Miranda's like, but why is it like, why do they all have to be so big?
Yeah.
And, I don't even remember how she decides, but she kind of just decides that you can't pick your future from a hat.
Yeah. We also get in one of those little flash forward scenarios where she's picking her futures out of a hat. One of them is stay-at-home mom. And we see that Gordo is Lizzie's future husband in that flash forward, which is giving the Lizzie Gordo love a little validation in this episode.
This one's weird because I remember the message so much more than the actual episode. Like I feel like it all happened in like 2 days. Like you could tell me the whole episode was just the nightmare and the conversation with the parents and I'd be like, yep, sounds right.
Yeah, sure. It was a lot of flash forward scenarios. Like, a lot of the episode was like the nightmare and then them picking the futures out of the hat and flashing forward to what those futures would hold for Lizzie. So a lot of it wasn't actual in the moment dialogue between the characters.
Does she decide right after picking them out of the hat that that's not the way to go though? Like what happens to make her real? You don't know?
I don't remember.
Okay.
I agree. I think the message stands out. And this one, don't pick your future from a hat. Also, never too late to change your career. You can do it at any age, at any time.
Also, the point from the parents is kind of like, you don't have to know when you're young. And Miranda and Gordo, well, not Gordo, they kind of give
that as
well.
You don't have to know when you're old either.
Yeah. I mean, Gordo's like, I'm going to be a director. But yeah. Miranda's like, you know what the odds are of me being a concert violinist? I don't even know if I want that. But also, if I want that, that's incredibly competitive.
Yep. Then we get a little more lighthearted, less serious. Well, it actually is kind of serious, but...
It's actually kind of related.
Yeah. Matt is watching scary movies, and Joe the whole time is like, Sam, this is too scary. We shouldn't let him watch it. And Sam's like, he'll be fine. He likes it.
So they're all watching it together.
Yep. And then he gets convinced that there's spirits or ghosts in the house because he keeps hearing things. Turns out, just a bunch of puppies under the porch.
How does that happen? I've heard of that happening with cats, but puppies? How can there be a dog under your porch and you don't know it? Because it happens for like a couple of days that he hears these noises.
Yeah, also like there's... you can't do anything to convince me that these puppies are from the same litter. They're not. They're all different sizes. A couple of them are actual dogs. So it doesn't make any sense. But I agree. I think that happens with cats, but like dogs are too big and dogs don't really do that. They'll like be in a garage or something when they're pregnant and having babies. They're not like hiding under your porch like a cat would do.
Unless this porch is really high up. It's the whole backyard optics we're not really sure about.
Nope.
I just really like the shot of when they're watching the movie and Matt gets really scared and he like sandwiches himself in the coffee table where he's still watching. Because he's like, oh, I just couldn't see well enough.
Yeah. It's cute. Ooh, two more episodes.
Episode 12. This is the one where we get the giant, the hoarding, the giant things for saving bulk items. That's the word. I'm a soccer mom. Yep. So, best dressed for much less.
Mm-hmm.
In this one, we've got yearbook superlatives. We're voting on them. I don't think any of my schools did yearbook superlatives, but I also never got a high school yearbook because that shit was expensive. Mm. So, Lizzie, she just kind of wants to be one. She thinks it'd be cool to be one. All of the popular kids are already going to be. It's going to be Kate or Claire for best dressed, and it's going to be Kate or Claire for best personality, whichever one was. Blah, 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 blah. Miranda, they think, has a shot at most poised because apparently Miranda, like, is very... I don't know. Elegant, doesn't trip.
Yeah.
In all fairness, I never noticed, but maybe I never noticed because it was true. Because she just walks and she doesn't fall like Lizzie does all the time.
Yep.
Gordo wants to be most photographed, which is not a superlative, but it is a thing that he points out all kids count how many photographs they're in.
It's a Gordo way of not fitting in while still trying to fit in. Like, yeah, I don't want to be a new normal superlative, but what I do want to be is most photographed because everyone counts how many times they're in the yearbook once they get it.
And they do kind of point this out in this episode and also later on when they reference it of like, remember that time when you totally cared about a thing that people would notice? And so they decide Lizzie could be best dressed. She has good style. And she saw these really cool jeans at Style Shack.
Yeah.
Thank you for writing that in our summary. These really cool jeans that are really expensive. They're like $100 or something.
$60.
But they're $60.
The full outfit she wants is $110. But the pants are just $60. And she ends up getting the pants because she only has $10, but Miranda and Gordo both pitch in money so she can get the pants.
Because her mom is not going to buy her these pants. She asks her mom and her mom says, oh, I always tried to be best dressed, but so-and-so always beat me out. But no, I'm not spending $60 on a pair of pants, Lizzie.
But what Joe does offer to do is, let's go bargain hunting. Let me see these pants you want, and we'll find you something else that's cool, that's mm-hmm. affordable, that you'll still feel confident and great in, and everyone else will love.
And she goes, they're called bargains for a reason. No one wants them. And so she gets the pants, and because Lizzie is not most poised, she spills an entire Slurpee all over them as soon as she walks around in them. She has to switch into the clothes that her mom got her while she was off at Style Shack getting these pants. Her mom actually got her a super cute outfit. And so she has to put those on. And then everyone likes her outfit anyway. And I don't remember who wins best dressed. But
Claire.
But she has lots of compliments on her pants. Miranda cannot win most poised because when Lizzie gets the Slurpee on the pants and falls down, she takes Miranda out with her.
Yes, correct. I don't know what ends up happening to Gordo if he gets most photographed, But the episode ends in a Lizzie and Joe heart to heart where Lizzie is like, you know, I got nothing out of this. I didn't get most dress. I can't return the pants. My friends are now out of their money. And really what I missed out on was a fun day of shopping with my mom. And so she asked Joe, hey, can we go bargain hunting together sometime? And Joe's like, I would love that. And it's very cute and very sweet.
I like when Lizzie says, and now I ruin these. I can't return these pants that none of us could afford anyway. And Miranda and Gorda go, none of us?
Yeah, because they paid for them.
This is also, okay, like, great message about, like, frugality and all of that. It's not necessarily better if it's more expensive. My wardrobe is mostly basics from that I buy firsthand or thrifted items.
Yep.
But what really stands out to me is that Joe has a giant tub of mustard and it's like bigger than my head.
Yeah.
And it would grow mold. I don't care how many mouths you're feeding, it would grow mold before you eat all of it.
Well, also, like, just to clarify for people who maybe have not watched this and are not watching on YouTube to see how big Amanda mimed the jar of mustard being, we're not talking about Costco size items here. We're talking about, like, Joe has a connection to a restaurant supply store.
Like, it's about the size of a watermelon.
Oh, it's bigger. It's like the size when I worked at a deli, that's the size that our condiments came in. And then we poured them into the tubs. And mm-hmm. This was a deli that made hundreds of sandwiches a day. So, like, no one in their right mind, even if you had, she only has two kids, but even if she had 12 kids, you still don't need that much damn mustard.
No. And then we see her again with the toilet paper. But this is like where she has a bunch and she's having to shove it in the kitchen cabinets because there's no more room in the bathrooms. But also, like, the idea that she would have room in the kitchen cabinets when she's buying jars of mustard like that. No, ma'am. I don't even have that kind of room in my kitchen cabinets and I live alone and barely buy stuff.
Yeah.
But it's just so funny because you, like, never see her with those kinds of props again. But also, kudos to the props department because you really had me paying attention this episode.
Yeah.
They really I sent Jess pictures of that stuff when I was watching it. I was like, where the fuck did she get this?
Yeah. And the moment I saw the mustard, I was like, restaurant supply store. It's the only place.
Yeah, it's outlandish. And speaking of outlandish, Matt ends up on the show called The Uncle Wendell Show. I don't even know what
that is. For making a funny face. And his funny face isn't even that funny. It's just like, doesn't he just do like a, or something?
I don't even remember. I didn't know why he was on the show. Didn't, like, he and Sam went to go watch the taping of the show and then he gets put on it?
Exactly, for making a funny face. And then he ends up becoming, like, a child celebrity and they are mm-hmm. being, like, bombarded by hordes of kids while they're at the mall when Joe's going bargain hunting. So then he decides to go into hiding and then the show gets canceled.
Oh, it got canceled? I thought he asked out of it.
Nope, it gets canceled.
Oh, well, this plotline felt like they were reaching a little bit. So, because there's this, but there's already the episode where Lizzie is a model. And I think we have another one. Oh, we do. There's another one coming up that we'll talk about next episode. Where we repeatedly teach through Lizzie the whole, like, child celebrity is not fun thing, which is hilarious because they're creating some of, at least one of, the biggest Disney child stars ever.
Yep.
In this show. And it's not a relatable plot line because if anything, you're just teaching it to a bunch of kids who maybe want to be her. So maybe it's like a cautionary tale, but also you're still creating her and most kids can't relate to that. Most kids aren't going through that.
Yeah. But also, like, as we're learning with season two, not every episode has a relatable plot line. Some episodes are just for fucking shits and giggles.
Especially Matt's.
Yeah. Yeah. His plot lines are almost always there for that sole reason.
An episode that does have a plot line that's teaching a lesson that's relatable, I guess, kind of. I don't know. It's still a little outlandish. Episode 13. The last one we're going to talk about in this episode. You're a Good Man, Lizzie McGuire.
Yep. Kate and Lizzie are in charge of decorations for the spring fling dance.
How many dances is this now?
I feel like this is like the fourth of the season. Maybe it's the third.
We had this, we had Sadie's. It might be the second of this season, but I digress. We've had a lot. And this season is also the same year so far. We're still in seventh grade that we were in season one.
No, but there's a couple episodes that I pointed out earlier where they do mention they're 14.
Yeah, but you...
Which is confusing.
As far as we know, they're still in the same... Anyway.
Yes.
A lot of dances. Spring fling dance, Kate and Lizzie in charge of decorations.
Yep. They're like walking the space and Kate's like, I want this here. And Lizzie's like, well, I think this will be doable. And then Kate pushes over the statue of the bust of the first president of the middle school. Going back to middle school budgets, you're not making a statue of a bust of your first president. Or not president, principal. That's ridiculous. I said president, I meant principal. Lizzie feels guilty that this statue is now cracked in three pieces. So we don't know what happens to the bust part. But to the head part that's split into two pieces, Lizzie puts that in her backpack and is carrying it around. She asks Gordo and Miranda for help, and they like chew a bunch of bubble. I love this. They chew a bunch of bubble gum to try to like stick it together, which is just like, of course that's not going to work, but it's hilarious that like as kids they were like, well, bubble gum's sticky, like maybe this will work. We have a bunch of it on hand. The current principal ends up holding an assembly and is like, we are not going to have the spring fling dance until someone comes forward to breaking and ruining this statue. Kate is never going to come forward to doing this. So they're just not going to have a dance. Miranda ends up, I don't remember his name, I didn't write it down. Miranda ends up getting a date and she's really looking forward to being asked to a dance for the first time. And she's like, this dance has to happen. Someone actually asked me to the dance. We have to go. And so Lizzie feels really bad that this dance isn't going to happen because Kate, of course, is not going to come forward. So Lizzie takes the blame. Oh, I thought you were going to interject with something incorrect that I said.
No, you didn't. I was thinking really hard because I know Miranda says his name so many times and I don't know what it is. It might have been like Toby or something.
It's definitely not Toby, but it is like a 4 or 5 letter name.
Yeah, it's a, but she says it a million times, but it's kind of funny neither of us can remember it despite how many times she says it because we never see him again. We've never seen him before. And that's the thing. She goes, but he was going to ask me. And they go, who? Because they don't know who this kid is either.
And then in the end, everyone ends up bringing the dance to Lizzie's house so that they can all be together. And you get this hilarious scene of Kate with the perfectly decorated auditorium pissed that no one showed up.
It's so, so cute because pretty early after she admits that she is the person who broke the statue, Ethan asks Miranda or Gordo, he says something like, it's not cool that she did it. And they go, she didn't do it. Kate did it. She just took the blame so we could have a good time. And so he's the first one you see actually to show up at her house. And she's like, what are you doing here? Why aren't you at the dance? And he's like, well, if you can't come to the dance, we're going to bring the dance to you. And they just make a party out of her house. And it's so touching and adorable. And I just really love the himbo that is Ethan Kraft.
It's so cute. I love it.
My eyes just started to water because of how much I love Ethan Kraft. Lizzie and I have that in common, but it's a cute episode. I have to say, obviously Kate's in the wrong. I don't know what the message here is because I wouldn't necessarily have done what Lizzie did. I wouldn't have taken the blame for someone else's thing. I guess take one for the team is the message maybe.
Yeah.
But I kind of relate to Kate because, like, as soon as it breaks, she doesn't care. And she's like, they have no proof it was me. So what does it matter? At the end of the day, they're going to have to move on.
Yeah, but also I'm like, there's no cameras at this middle school.
Not in 2000.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
My middle school didn't have cameras.
This episode has probably my favorite bloopers. At the end, there's this super long blooper of Hillary trying to say the spring fling dance, but she keeps saying spling fing, and it was hilarious. She's like, the spling fing dance. Oh, sorry. And she's like, the spling fing dance. And she just keeps saying it and cannot say spring fling, and it's just great. I loved it.
I think also this one has like a wait, what moment. Is there a point? Okay, they do this in episode 13 and in episode 12 where they talk about how Lizzie is very much not poised, and they give like flashbacks to her getting her head hit and falling over and all kinds of stuff. And at one point, it's either this one, I wrote in my notes that it was this one, but now I'm questioning that it might have been the previous episode. But they definitely do a flashback to episode 14. Like right before it airs, because she falls really hard in episode 14, and they show it in one of these flashbacks.
It's probably because they filmed out of order.
Probably. Matt and Lainey have a cute-ish storyline.
Yeah. Fine. Yeah, it's fine. They're saving up money to buy this BMX bike. Mm-hmm. They don't make enough money to get two of them. They have to clean out their neighbor's attic. It's actually, like, really awful, and they do a lot of hard work. And for the amount of work they did, I think they said the bikes were, like, $100-something a piece. They definitely should have gotten enough money to buy two bikes. Mm-hmm. But they just buy one bike. They end up sharing it, and they end up hating it because they can't do it together. They're like, we have so much more fun hanging out together. Why did we think we needed to spend money to buy this bike when it's not an activity that requires the both of us? And they both admitted to each other, like, we had so much more fun making the money for the bike than we did actually riding the bike.
Sam refuses to spend this kind of money on a bike. And I just have to say, this is what bikes cost. This is what cheap Walmart bikes cost. Maybe children's bikes are a little less than $100. I bought my bike at Walmart, and it was $200, and that's the most expensive bike they have for adults. When you go to an actual bike shop, they're $500 or more. A bike that costs about $100, very reasonable. If you're not willing to spend that on a bike for your child probably doesn't have any sort of bike.
Well, this also was 20 years ago.
Yeah. Bikes has gone up that much?
Sure, I'm just saying that, like, I don't know. There's a likelihood that, like, bikes were slightly cheaper 20 years ago, but I agree with you that, like, $100 for a bike doesn't seem crazy. But also, like, why would they pay for a bike for Lammy?
Yeah. Well, if they, I mean, maybe Matt already had a bike, but they didn't say it that way. Because if Matt already had a bike, A, they could just save them up the money, get Lanny the bike. Or, you know, they, if Matt didn't, they could clearly afford this bike.
Yes.
But also, if Matt already has a bike, then you can both bike. You just can't do it on the BMX bike. It's fine. I just think that Matt probably already has a bike because we've seen their backyard.
Yep. He definitely has a bike.
They had a Velcro wall in an episode. I think he has a bike.
They but built so a giant obstacle course in one episode. It's like a skate ramp and stuff. Like, he definitely has a bike.
Yeah, but it's still cute, the whole we like to do things together. This is kind of, I think you split it just based on, like, episode amounts, but it's kind of a great place to leave off with season two, because I think episode 14 is where we start to get into eighth grade, which is where the continuity issues go all over the place. And also some of the writing gets really experimental for Lizzie. It becomes a little less grounded. So I'm excited to get into that in our next episode.
Also, please follow us on all the social media. We are 90s Babies Nostalgia on YouTube and Instagram. Spell out the word 90s. And on Twitter, we are 90s_babies. Also, we're going to have a TikTok, but let's say that's 90s Babies Nostalgia. And I will correct myself if that is the wrong handle. But please follow us. Also, rate us 5 stars. Well, I guess just give us a rating, but we would really love if it was 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, as that really would help us out.
Yes. If you're watching us on YouTube, or probably if you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever, you can find the links to all of our social media in the descriptions, as well as to our theme music composer, Patrick Dunovit, and the Instagram of Don Wheeler, who made our delightful artwork. But again, yeah, we would really appreciate it if you rated us. And also if you contact us on Instagram or wherever you get your social media of us, to just let us know how we're doing, your thoughts, anything you want us to bring up. If you're rewatching it with us and like you have things to say, we are recording this a bit in advance, but we're happy to get to them later as we come, as you send us messages, regardless of what we're talking about in the show.
Join us for our next episode, where we are diving deeper into season 2, and we're going to be covering episodes 14 through 26 next.
Yes, we're going to get lots of Lizzie and Gordo. We're going to get 8th grade drama. We're going to lose some Miranda. It's going to be fun. And we hope that you are enjoying Lizzie as much as we are.
Yep, it's a good one. All right. See you guys in the next one.
Goodbye.
Bye. 90s babies, nostalgia.